The opportunity of meeting winemakers and visiting wineries in different parts of the world is one of our main objectives at Life Between the Vines. As it turns out, this next interview took place in our very own backyard. Sort of. Parallel 44 Winery is located in Kewaunee, Wisconsin, just a few miles from Lake Michigan and about 15 minutes from Green Bay, and is owned and operated by the husband-wife team of Steve Johnson and Maria Milano. Once you enter the Tuscan-style winery, you might as well be in Napa. The scent of the juice fills the air, and even at 11 a.m. on a snow-covered Saturday, several folks bellied up to the tasting room bar. All right, I'm here at Parallel 44 Winery in Kewaunee, Wisconsin, with Steve Johnson. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me, Ray.
Thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
So we're in your tasting room. Tell me when you started Parallel 44.
The vines first went in the ground in May of 05, and then we had our first harvest in the fall of 06. Not a significant one, but then we opened our doors for business in May of 07. So we've been an entity in operation for a little over 2.5 years.
How many acres do you own?
We have 35 acres on site. 9 acres is planted. Our goal is to continue to expand the vineyard, probably an acre per year at a time, so that we have at least 25 to 30 acres at some point, hopefully not in the too distant future.
That's really ambitious. Wow.
It is. Yeah, it's you really have to think way in advance the amount of effort that's going to go into it, but our passion really is to produce a wine that's reflective of this area, and you can't do that without grapes being grown right here.
Now, do you contract any grapes otherwise, or are they all estate?
We have contracted for grapes from Napa Valley, from the Horse Haven Hill area of Washington. We've also brought in grapes from upstate New York, and we have some grapes grown from a grower that's probably about 10 miles from here. And the hope is that more and more Wisconsin growers will be able to provide the grapes that we need for this industry.
As a quick aside, being here in the tasting room, and we're in sort of the side area of the tasting room, it's almost like it's where you probably entertain larger groups.
Yes, in fact, last night we had a little folk music concert here.
And it's kind of interesting. This is the month of January, which, of course, as we know in Wisconsin, is a lovely time of year. There's snow everywhere out here. There's tons of fog. I got here at 11 o'clock, and there were people in your tasting room.
Yeah, it's surprising. People come from far and wide, and a lot of them are repeat customers. But one thing I've realized is that we need to provide a year-round destination place for people. So we're offering a lot of different courses and events, even in the dead of winter. In fact, we're going to actually have what we call the Frozen Tundra Wine Fest at the end of February for a 2-day celebration where we're going to talk about our estate wines and be outside and enjoy the fact that we're in the middle of Wisconsin.
That's great. And it is unique. As I mentioned, when I drove up to see this very typical winery tasting room in the middle of farmland.
Yeah, it's not something that many people around here ever contemplated seeing. But it was a passion of ours, and I looked into it, and I searched far and wide to find the right kind of soil composition. We're on the Niagara Escarpment here, which the soils are ideal, and we do have a little bit of a lake effect. So the site, while it may not be on the main thoroughfare, is basically an ideal site for grape growing. And I think if you make good wine, people will make the effort to find the place, even if it seems like it's in the middle of nowhere.
Now, I'm making the assumption that you built this structure?
Yes, we did. Everything was from scratch. It was just an empty cornfield and just 5 years ago, and put the vines in the ground and let the passion come forward and put the building up. And actually, the room we're sitting in was not originally part of the building. We had to expand because business was so good the first year that we had to add on to it. Now we're out of room now, so we're going to probably build a second building, hopefully sometime this summer.
So this is your field of dreams. I mean, you've got a farm field and you built a winery.
Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, the genesis of it probably is multifaceted. I think I'm a farmer deep down at heart. I wanted a family endeavor, and I just love the different disciplines involved with grape growing and winemaking. So it all came together, and it's still a dream that's still, I think, evolving as we speak.
What kind of reaction did you get from your neighbors when you did this?
A lot of people thought at first when they saw the trellis system go up that we were growing ginseng because that's crop that's in central Wisconsin. But I don't think people ever contemplated grapes being planted here. Everyone's quite happy about it. A lot of curious onlookers. A lot of people, you know, just stop in and want to check it out. So we're very happy to take people in the vineyard and explain the uniqueness of what we're doing. And we, at least I would say three or four times a week in the summer, we have people coming by asking, how do you do this? Can I do this myself?
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So the curious element is one of the big draws.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And to that's part of one of the things we want to provide people here is that the educational aspect, without being overly academic, you can learn a lot just by walking around, talking to the winemaker, going back in the barrel room and asking questions. And that's what makes wine so appealing, is it's this evolving interest that you can have. And it's very experiential. You have to be there. You have to smell it, taste it, look at it, and feel it. And we have people who want to just kind of hang around. We have our harvest. We have over 50 people that sign up just to come out to help us pick grapes. They just want to be part of the day.
I could see that. What a great thing.
Yes, it's not something you can do every day. So.
And your harvest time is, I'm assuming, obviously September-ish?
Generally, it's late September, early October. This year was later because we had a very cool growing season. But some of the harvest got extended. Actually, we did a late harvest St. Pepin on December 10th in a snowstorm. So, but generally, you'd confine to the last week of September, first week of October.
Now, this harvest we're talking about would have been 2009 for the people who are listening. And for anybody local, they'll remember that there was no such thing as a summer until September. So you had a hot September going on.
Yeah, we were saved by the last half of September with the growing degree days and the heat. Prior to that, we were very nervous. It still ended up being, I think, the 12th coldest summer on record here. But you come to accept that as a grape grower, that you take what Mother Nature gives you, and then what you do is you alter your growing practices so that you can, basically bring along the best aspects of your grapes. And so you have to be in tune with your vineyard and measure the weather versus what you're doing in the vineyard. So that's the challenge of it, and that leads to the differences in vintages that people come to appreciate.
So I wouldn't even want to say you wear four hats. I mean, number one, you're a farmer. Number two, you're a business owner on its own. Three, you're an owner of a tasting room, and you bottle your wine. I could go on for a while here.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a real job.
Yes, I also work as an attorney for Brown County, the Corporation Counsel's Office, so, and father of three, and so it is a family endeavor. I have to give a lot of credit to my parents, who are out here probably 60 hours a week, as is my wife, and we have a lot of part-time help that helps us, and there's some days I don't know what day of the week it is, because we're just flying around trying to get everything under control.
So when you first decided to do this, and I should mention your wife's name is Maria.
Yes.
And she's the one who set this interview up. But whose idea was this? No, Maria's Italian, am I right?
Yes, her father actually came from Italy. Both her father and my father grew grapes in the backyard, made wine in the basement. So we both have recollections of that smell and aroma coming from the basement in fall. And I have very fond memories of it. And maybe it's just in both of our blood that we need to do that. I think a lot of people were leery of, what are you trying to do here? This is not where you grow grapes. But when we had success with the vineyard, she was on board with the establishment of the winery.
Hmm.
So it's a joint effort, and it's hard to pinpoint the genesis of it, but we both have a passion for wine, no doubt.
We were talking off mic about the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association. I didn't know there was even such a thing. So tell me about that.
Yes, it's in its second year of operation. The interest has grown. I think there's over 150 members, and they are anywhere from people who actually have vineyards to people who are interested in starting their own vineyards. And we've had several conferences, and we're working really hard to make people understand that the industry of wine in Wisconsin will be almost totally contingent on the quality of grapes grown in Wisconsin. So not only do we have to generate interest in grape growing, but we have to have people develop their skills in grape growing and have the winemakers of the state work with the grape growers so that they get the quality of fruit needed to make the best wine. Because, every good winemaker will tell you that 90% of the wine or the quality of it will come from what's done in the vineyard. So it's uphill battle. It's a sort of a fledgling industry, but there's no doubt that there's potential in it.
So as a member of this industry, as well as being an owner and then a member of the association, do you ever tour around, whether it be doing dinners or presentations, talking about Parallel 44?
That's one of the aspects that we try to do, is to get the word out there about the uniqueness of our wine and emphasize that the distinctiveness of our wine is what some might refer to as cool climate wines. And that is going to require some education. And I think the wineries are starting to understand that in order for this industry to be promoted, we have to explain to people the varietal characteristics of the grapes that we grow here. Their names like Frontenac, Marechal Foch, St. Pepin, Vignole, those are names that are not commonly seen on labels in grocery stores when you're purchasing wine. But they make great wines, and the industry, you know, all of us have to get together to educate people on that. And if we can find the money to do it, I think that's going to be one of the main focuses of both the Grape Growers Association and the Winery Association.
Well, how many cases do you produce here at Parallel 44?
This year we'll be close to 6,000 cases. It's rather small in comparison to you know, the larger wineries that people have that know the household names. But I mean, we've more than doubled our production in the past 2 years. So I'm very encouraged by the fact that there's a growing interest in our wines. Our wines are now being distributed statewide, and you know, the challenge of this is that we actually sold out of half of our varietals right before the Christmas season, which is a bit discouraging to customers, but it gives us the motivation to expand our production and feel confident about it.
That's the difficult dance you do, isn't it? Is that you need to sell the wine, but you can't sell the wine.
Right, and wine production is one of those things where you must be patient. You have to wait for it to be grown, and then you have to wait for it to be produced and aged to the proper level before you consume it. So, you know, I think a lot of people have an idea that winemaking is something that we can kick out, you know, every month of the year, depending on what the demand is. And there's really only one time of the year you're producing wine, so you have to make sure you make the right guesstimation as to what you're going to need for that following year or years thereafter, actually.
Yeah, I imagine. And just as a aside for me, too, the reaction 6,000 is a lot more than I expected.
Okay.
I didn't think it was a low number. I thought it was a fairly high number, again, from what my experience has been out west. That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
Let's talk about what you actually have in the bottle. Can you just go through your list for me so people know?
Sure. We have some vinifera type of wines. We have a Chardonnay. We have Cabernet, a Riesling. But then we also take great pride in the wines that would fall in the category of cool climate wines, or wines that we grow in our vineyard. And those are Frontenac, Foch, St. Pepin, St. Croix, Vignole, and Swenson. And these varietals, we've come up with some different names for them because people don't know those grape varietal names. But we have everything from a sweet red to a dry red, and a sweet white to a dry white. And we've used these first few years to kind of gauge what people's interest is in the wine. And I can't say any one category is the predominant one. People tend to like all these different wines. And we have oak age wines. We have stainless steel fermented wines. And definitely my winemaking skill is increasing as we go through this. There's a lot to learn about it. The wine we're probably most proud of is our meditation wine. That comes from our Frontenac grapes. It was made in a sort of a dessert port style fashion, but it's really just 100% Frontenac grape. And it won a double gold medal in international competition. And so that's one of the reasons why I keep, you know, pushing us to produce as much wine from our own grapes, because that wine is something I can control from start to finish, the grapes that I'm growing myself.
There's a lot of pride in something like that, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. You know, to me, it's all about the memories I have of working in the hot sun, establishing the trellis system, pulling leaves, pruning the vines, you know, in the dead of winter. You know what went into that wine, so you really appreciate it. And I think our goal or challenge here is to get others who may not have been in the vineyard to understand and appreciate what's unique about that wine and what went into it. And I do sense that in people. They want to know about it. So we're going to keep working hard at it.
Sounds like you've done pretty well so far. And tasting this wine, this is the Frontenac.
Yes.
And it's meditation, I believe, right?
Yeah, I kind of stole coined the term from the Italians, who referred to a lot of their after-dinner dessert wines as meditation wines. Generally, it's a white wine, but I like the fact that this is a dessert-style wine, and it helps you meditate on the wonders of life, so I coined it meditation wine. But that same grape, that shows the versatility of a lot of these grapes. This year is made as a rosé style, and we're going to be releasing it in a couple weeks, and it's going to be called the Frozen Tundra. And I like the fact that, you know, this is a grape that was grown on the Frozen Tundra, and is a very unique, distinctive flavor that you're not going to find in any wines that you purchase from California or anywhere else in the world.
And this particular wine, do you distribute this at all, or is it only available here at the winery?
Our intent is to 4 of these new wines that we're going to release just to sell on premise. But my guess is that they'll be quite popular and the distributor will be asking for the wine sold in other places. So as our vineyard expands, I think that's something we will be able to do in the future.
That's great. This would be nice to find this in a store.
Yeah, it is a challenge to produce the quantity that you need, but I think it's going to be popular off-site too.
And what quantity do you the meditation in?
That was, we have a little over 2 acres of Frontenac, so we produced about 7,500 half bottles of this, and there's not much left of it, but we intend to produce it again.
That's a big piece of property for that too, though.
Yeah, it's generally, though, with the grape varietals that we grow here, you yield about 3.5 tons per acre. You can yield more than that, but I think then you start to lose some of the quality. And that's one thing we realize. In this climate, with this type of grape varietal, you have to be very sensitive to what your yields are. Not that they aren't in Europe or California, but we have to squeeze out every growing degree day that we can to reach the maturity that the grapes need. And that means maintaining those vines and reducing yield. In fact, the Frontenac that we harvested this year, we dropped fruit 2 times through the season and probably only yielded half of what we could have. So it's painful to drop the fruit, but in the end you realize it's about the quality of the wine. And if you want people coming back, you have to sacrifice quantity for quality sometimes.
For you, what started you in wine? Was there an epiphany? Was there a moment? Was there a glass of wine?
I can't pinpoint it to a specific thing. I think it was something that bubbled under the surface for many years, and the fact that I came from a family that grew up on a farm. I remember on our honeymoon in Napa Valley, sitting between 2 rows of vines with a baguette and a bottle of wine and looking up at the blue sky in between the vines going, isn't this the way you should live your life? And I really had no idea the amount of work involved, but somehow I just felt it in my bones that this was really how I should spend my energy. And my wife being very interested in it too, it seems like a natural thing. Most vineyards and wineries historically have been family ventures. I love the idea of a family venture. So it's some multiple factors that led to this. And I can't pinpoint to a bottle of wine, but I think it's just born to do something like this.
So we were talking about this area being designated as an AVA. That's in Wisconsin, which is pretty neat.
Yes, and it's no easy task to get that designation from the federal government. You have to prove to the federal government that your specific geographic region is capable of producing a quality wine that has a specific distinctive aspect to it. And the soils and climate of this area have lent themselves to being capable of producing quality wine. So we need more vineyards in this area, greater wine production in this area to drive more people to this area. But, you know, the starting base is here for something that could be quite big in the future. And, you know, a lot of people who aren't familiar with wine probably don't know what an AVA designation means. But for people who really enjoy wine and understand that the uniqueness of wine comes from its regionality, it's a big deal. And in 10, 15 years from now, we'll look back on this and say, yeah, that was the kind of the cornerstone to getting people to appreciate, you know, the uniqueness, the greatness of not only Northeast Wisconsin, but kind of the upper Midwest capability of producing quality wine.
Many of our listeners are aware what an AVA is, Steve, but why don't you go ahead and describe it so for those who don't know.
Sure. It means American Viticultural Area, and it's just a designation that the federal government gives to a specific region with specific boundaries that have proven to have distinctive soil composition, climate conditions that lend itself to producing a wine that's not only of quality, but distinct from wines produced in other parts of the world. There may be subtle differences, but the fact that someone has recognized the distinctive features of it means a lot to people who enjoy wine because they can rely on that designation as giving them some value that they wouldn't otherwise know about if they didn't have it on the label.
Obviously, people are familiar with wines all over the world being able to age, and of course, they don't always see that for Midwestern wines. So tell me, do your wines have the ability to age?
I definitely think so. I've noticed it myself, you know, over the last 2 years. It's been in bottle for a little over 2 years now, and the flavor profile hasn't changed dramatically, but it's deepened. You know, a tannin structure is key often to the quality or the ageability of a wine. Now, the challenge we have in the upper Midwest is that the grape varietals aren't necessarily known for their tannin structure, although there are varietals coming out like Marquette that have very adequate tannin structure for good ageability. But using a little winemaker finesse, recognizing that this has a very high acid level and it's balanced by the sugar and alcohol, lends itself to being capable of aging. So, you know, that's one of the things that this area really needs is more experience in making wine from these grapes. And people shouldn't think that just because we haven't done it yet doesn't mean we can't. You take that challenge and you make something unique out of it. And almost by chance, I think we figured out that the Frontenac lends itself to a dessert-style wine that has the capacity to age because of its acidity, which you won't often find in a lot of other reds in California.
Hmm. Do you do a nice vine at all? Or?
No, I intend to do that. We're doing a late harvest St. Pepin, which is a grape that's commonly used for ice wine. Wuldersheim outside of Madison makes a St. Pepin ice wine that's very popular. So this late harvest St. Pepin will taste quite similar to that. It was harvested December 10th. So it was frozen, but not the traditional 72 consecutive hours at 17 degrees before picked. But we do intend to do that, if not next year, the following year. It goes back to the notion of let's be good at doing something here that no one else can do as well. And the Canadians obviously are world-renowned for their ice wine, but, you know, we're in the 44th parallel, as is a lot of Ontario that's producing ice wine. So why not, try to emulate and produce ice wine also? It's very few places in the world where you can make truly authentic ice wine. This is one of them.
I've talked to a number of people, and I've asked the same question to everybody. Do you have any preference, screw caps versus corks?
I'm a traditional. I love the sound of the cork popping. I do think that it does lend itself to fine reds being able to age better. But I have purchased a lot of wine from screw tops. If I had the capital, I'd probably invest in a machine with a screw top and then see how marketable that wine was. I think there's sort of an image issue that a lot of people probably still have with screw tops, but if you want to avoid, you know, cork taint, it's the way to go. But I don't foresee ourselves doing it in the near future, really for two reasons. One, the capital expense, but secondly, I'm still pretty much a traditionalist.
Steve, do you ship within the state of Wisconsin or outside of it?
Yes, we do. Within the state we do, and then 13 other states we can ship to. So if you go to our website, it's set up where you can put your order online and we ship that out to you. It's not that burdensome. I mean, just contact us and we'll figure out how to do it.
And what is that website, Steve?
Sure, that would be www.parallel44.com. And I really encourage people to check out the website. We're really going to be working on enhancing it and being more interactive. One of the new components is called What's Up Winemaker, where I'm going to be blogging with people about what we're doing in the winery here, so people can sort of feel connected and understand and appreciate the wines that they're purchasing from us. And it's not so much just about our wine, just wine in general. It's we want people to appreciate all kinds of wines. It's, you know, a wine lover appreciates that you have to try different things, and we just want to be, you know, a piece in that puzzle.
That's great. Steve, thanks very much for your time today. I really appreciate you letting me take you away from the tasting room.
Thank you, Ray. I really appreciate every opportunity I have to talk about it.